22. 2 days later, Martin's place was coming along nicely. He had a nice flat table to set his laptop on and a chair to sit on as he used it. And use it he had. He'd taken a page from Philip's playbook. He set up exclusionary zones that kept anyone from entering his building if he wasn't there. He poked around the shell and found that most of the food items he'd want to replicate were already programmed in. That saved him some labor and the trouble of getting a stew pot, although he figured he'd have to get one eventually if he was going to have anyone come visit. He had already tweaked his macro to make it less of a showpiece and more of a practical display of power. The people of this chronologically polluted version of medieval England were much more sophisticated than he had originally suspected, but he still doubted they'd be impressed by his ability to do the worm. He was working on this and that when, for the first time on his own, he heard the eerie, warbling chime that meant that the hand phone was ringing. Martin held his hand up in front of his face and said, "Hello?" A crudely animated image of a flaming skull filled Martin's hand, and Gary's voice filled the air.
"Hey, Martin, you're still using the default icon."
"Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. What is the default icon?"
"The words default icon," said Gary's disembodied voice.
"Yeah," Martin said. "I gotta fix that."
"Yeah, well, do it later. I need you to come to my place right now. You know how to get here?"
"Yeah, don't use any coordinates you give me."
"You're smart, Martin. But I promise, no funny business. This is serious. Just use the location code Skull Gullet Cave."
Martin took a moment to make sure he was presentable. He put on his hat, grabbed his staff, and moments later he was standing in the massive stone mouth that marked the entrance to Gary's home. He found Jeff waiting for him.
"Come on back," Jeff said, beckoning Martin deeper into the cave.
They passed through the carefully designed set, through the concealed door, and into Gary's comparatively pleasant apartment. Inside, Gary was sitting on a bench next to Gwen, who was gripping a mug with both hands and looking off into the distance. They both had their backs to the table. As Martin and Jeff entered, Gary nodded subtly to them and tilted his head toward the other bench on the far side of the table. Taking his cue from Jeff, Martin nodded back and silently took a seat across the table from Gwen and Gary. After a moment, Gary turned sideways so he could address Jeff and Martin and still observe Gwen, who only moved occasionally to sip from her mug.
"She showed up here about a half hour ago," Gary said. "She was really worked up about something and wasn't making any sense. She said I was the closest wizard she knew. I hitched her horse and wagon and brought her inside. When I finally got her calmed down, she told me why she was freaked out, and I got worked up and didn't make any sense for a while. Then I called you two, and now you're up to speed."
"Why didn't you call Philip?"
Jeff asked.
"I tried, got no answer. He's probably up in his attic, doing nothing."
Sadly, it went without saying that Gary had tried to reach Tyler and failed.
"How'd Gwen know where you live?"
Martin asked, and immediately regretted it. Any other time, he'd have been tortured a bit for asking, but Gary wasn't in the torturing mood. Or perhaps, for the first time, he actually was.
"I've invited her here more than once," Gary said. "You can't blame a guy for trying."
"Actually, women can blame a guy for trying,"
Gwen said without turning to face any of them.
"We do it all the time."
"Okay, so come on, what is it?"
Jeff asked.
"Gwen, what happened?"
"There's a farmer who's been complaining that my garments get longer over time."
"Oh yeah, Sam, right?" Martin said. "Got his whole village convinced. Gwen ended up altering a ton of clothes."
Gwen nodded. She still hadn't turned to face them. Instead, staring into her drink. Jeff watched the back of her head as she spoke. Martin's eyes drifted to the hood of her favorite cloak, possibly the only one she owned for all he knew. The hood tapered to a point down near the small of her back in a decorative flourish.
"It's weird, the things we notice at times like these," Martin thought. "I got all the alterations done," Gwen said, "so I loaded the wagon and went to deliver them."
There was a long silence, punctuated by Jeff saying,
"And?"
"They were dead."
Martin and Jeff looked at each other, then at Gary, then at the back of Gwen's head. Martin hadn't known that it was possible for the back of someone's head to look upset, but Gwen's did.
"Sam and his family?"
Martin asked.
Yes,
Gwen said.
And his neighbors, and every other person in his village. Everyone, Martin. Everyone's dead.
Gwen was remembering what she had seen and was understandably starting to lose it again, so Gary took over.
It's a little village about an hour's ride away, not on any map. It's called Ricard's Bend. I'd say about 100 people, give or take, live there.
I don't get it. How does a whole town die? Were they attacked by animals or something?
No,
Gwen said.
Were they attacked by raiders?
Martin asked. Gwen stood and turned to face them. To Martin's surprise, she was not crying. She didn't even look close to tears. She looked close to murder. She said,
I don't know what happened to them, but I came here because I thought you lot might.
A few minutes later, they materialized on a hill on the outskirts of Ricard's Bend. A cluster of 7 or 8 smallish buildings with stone walls and thatched roofs stood on either side of a wide dirt road. The countryside was a random collection of gently rolling hills dotted with farmhouses and grain fields. A smallish river cut through the landscape toward the town, then predictably bent, right about where Martin figured some guy named Ricard had found it. It would have been quite idyllic, if not for all the corpses. At first, Martin didn't see them. It was obvious from a great distance that the town was completely still, which was eerie enough. Then, as they walked closer, they could see what looked like people having naps leaned up against trees or in front of buildings or face down in the middle of the road. Once they got within touching distance of the buildings, there was no doubt in any of their minds or noses that everyone was dead. Gwen was handling it better than the three wizards. Of course, she'd seen it before. None of them were forensic scientists, so there was little scientific about their actions. They yelled to see if anyone would answer, but they neither expected nor received any reply. Martin strained his ears, but all he heard was the sound of a dog growling somewhere far away. They walked around in a daze, looking at the dead bodies and exchanging confused looks with Gwen. When Gwen wasn't looking, they'd exchange alarmed looks with each other. There was no sign of any violence or bloodshed. It reminded Martin of things he'd read in history class about poison gas attacks. An entire village, caught in the act of living its life, killed in one stroke. There was evidence that it hadn't been an entirely normal day. Upon close inspection, certain patterns emerged. Martin very badly wanted to look at a member of the village he had seen before.
Hey, Gwen, where does that guy Sam live?
Martin asked. Gwen pointed to a farmhouse a mile or so down the road, sitting on the crest of a hill.
That's his house, if you want to go look. He has a wife and 2 little girls.
Jeff, who happened to be standing closest to Gwen, put a hand on her shoulder. She smiled sadly at him.
Would you like to magic us there?
She asked all 3 of them at once.
No, Martin said.
I think I could use a walk and some fresh air.
Gary quickly said,
Agreed.
Gwen shrugged and started walking down the road towards Sam's house. Jeff gave the other 2 wizards a knowing look, then kept pace with Gwen and started a conversation that the other 2 couldn't quite make out. Gary immediately got to business.
Martin, see anything weird about the bodies?
Mm-hmm,
Martin said quietly.
Sam was right. All of their pants are too long. They all seem to have really stubby arms and legs.
Yep, that's not all. Call me crazy, but it looks to me as if most of them died right after removing their shoes.
Gwen and Jeff were well ahead of them now, walking along the side of the road, next to the now vacant buildings. Martin and Gary were following, engrossed in a conversation neither liked.
That's why I want to see Sam,
Martin said.
I've met him. I know how tall he is. Was.
If I didn't know better, and I don't,
Gary said,
I'd say someone was trying to make hobbits.
I agree,
Martin spat.
This is clearly the work of a wizard.
A voice from behind said,
That's what we thought. Now!
A large piece of timber swung out from behind a building and caught Jeff on the back of the head with a loud crack. At the same instant, Martin felt a brutal impact on his left hand that sent his staff flying, and another blow to his head that plunged him into darkness.